From Spark and Anvil and Cardforge, this is The Finessier, in Chapter 1 of the Cardforge cast. This drama uses an AI-generated voice, voiced via Gemini 2.5.
The Finesser stood perfectly still, her hands clasped behind her back. She was observing a biscuit tin. It was not a particularly interesting tin, a bit faded, with a picture of a smiling badger on it, but it was in a very interesting place. It sat on the highest shelf of the grand pantry, a shelf so high it seemed to have more in common with the clouds than the checkered floor. And inside that tin was the last Shrewsbury biscuit. Beside her, a large man named Grummel, the Academy's official thing-getter, was having a very bad time. He had a ladder, but it was wobbly. He had a long hooked pole, but it was clumsy. He grunted and shoved the pole toward the tin. The pole clanged against the shelf, making dust rain down. The tin wobbled dangerously, but did not fall.
"It's stuck," Grummel boomed, his voice echoing among the jars of pickled onions. "Glued to the spot it is."
The Finesser said nothing. She simply watched the slight tremor that ran through the shelf each time Grummel's pole struck it. She noted the way the tin shifted, just a millimeter to the left, then back. She was not watching the tin so much as she was watching the space around the tin. Grummel heaved the pole again, missing entirely and knocking over a bag of flour, which erupted in a soft white puff. While he was coughing and sputtering, another pantry worker bustled past, pushing a cart loaded with potatoes. The cart had one squeaky, off-balance wheel, and as it rumbled by, the entire floor vibrated for a moment. In that exact moment, the Finesser raised her own slender, silver-tipped cane, not with force, but with the gentle precision of a watchmaker. She didn't hit the tin. She tapped the shelf just behind it. The vibration from the cart, combined with her tiny, perfectly timed tap, was enough. The badger-adorned tin slid smoothly forward and tilted. It did not crash to the floor. It landed softly in the Finesser's waiting, outstretched hands. Grummel stared, his face a mask of flour and astonishment. "How?" he stammered. "The cart did most of the work," the Finesser said softly, offering him the tin. "I just showed it where to go."
Years and years ago, when she was a small girl with two perfectly braided pigtails, there was a picnic. It was a glorious afternoon, full of sunshine, scratchy blankets, and the drone of happy bees. There was also only one remaining jam tart. It sat on a paper plate, a perfect circle of glistening red in a buttery crust, and her older brother Barnaby had claimed it. "It's mine," Barnaby declared, puffing out his chest. He was bigger, louder, and always got to the last of anything first. The little girl knew she could not win by arguing. She could not win by being faster or stronger. Barnaby had the tart, and he was sitting right next to it. That was his position. It was a very strong position. But she had a different one. She was sitting across from him, and she could see things he couldn't. She saw, for instance, a fat, sleepy wasp buzzing around the open bottle of lemonade. Barnaby was terrified of wasps. A direct appeal would fail. A tantrum would fail. But a wasp was a force of nature. The little girl didn't shoo the wasp. She didn't point it out. She waited. She watched it circle the lemonade, its tiny legs ticking in the air. Then, in a clear voice, she said, "Mother, may I please have a little more lemonade?" Her mother, happy to oblige, picked up the bottle and poured. The sudden movement disturbed the air. The wasp, startled from its sugary dreams, rose into the air and made a direct flight path for the next sweetest thing it could smell, the jam tart. It landed right in the center of the glistening red. Barnaby shrieked. It was a high, piercing sound, like a tea kettle. He leaped to his feet, waving his arms wildly and knocking the paper plate into the air. The jam tart flew in a perfect arc and landed, jam side up, on the grass right in front of the little girl. Barnaby, still swatting at imaginary insects, ran toward the safety of the car. The Finesser calmly picked up the tart, brushed off a single blade of grass, and took a thoughtful bite. She hadn't defeated her brother. She had simply let the wasp play first.
The Finesser's arrival at the Cardforge Academy was quiet. There was no grand announcement, only a meeting with the headmistress in the main entrance hall. The hall was famous for one thing, its enormous, enchanted double doors. They were meant to be automatic, gliding open for arriving students and staff, but they were notoriously stubborn. "They have a mind of their own," the headmistress said with a sigh. She was a tall, stern woman with spectacles that seemed to magnify her disappointment. "They only open when they feel like it. Some of our greatest minds have tried to solve them." As she spoke, the professor of brute force arrived. He ran at the doors full tilt, bouncing off with a loud oof. Next came the master of complex patterns, who tried a series of intricate hand waves and secret knocks. To no effect. The doors remained shut. They all stood there, looking defeated. The Finesser, however, was not looking at the doors. She was looking at the floor. She noticed the faint, rhythmic vibration that pulsed through the marble tiles every few minutes. She tilted her head, listening. It sounded like a deep, mechanical hum from the basement below. It was the academy's ancient plumbing system, which shuddered into life every time the water tanks refilled. She waited. The professor of brute force was preparing for another charge. The master of patterns was consulting a dusty book. The headmistress was about to suggest they all use the side entrance. Then the Finesser felt it, the deep, familiar rumble starting beneath her feet. Just as the vibration reached its peak, she walked calmly toward the doors. She didn't touch them. She didn't even look at them. She simply approached at that precise moment, and they slid open with a gentle, welcoming whoosh. The headmistress lowered her spectacles. "Remarkable," she whispered. "The pipes wanted to open them," the Finesser replied. "I merely agreed on the timing."
A young student named Pip slumped over the game table in the Finesser's classroom. "It's impossible," he groaned. "Every time I lose to the King of Clubs, I have the ace and the queen. I should win." The Finesser looked at the cards laid out. Pip was sitting to the right of the player who held the king, a terrible seat. "You are trying to shout at the king," she said gently. "You are playing your ace, and that is a very loud card. The king just hides." Pip looked confused. "But the ace is the strongest." "Strongest is not always best," the Finesser said. She picked up two teacups and a sugar bowl. "Imagine this sugar bowl is a grumpy badger who won't come out of his den. This cup is you. This other cup is your friend Leo, who is sitting right next to the badger's den." She placed the sugar bowl, the badger, next to one cup, Leo. She placed Pip's cup on the other side. "You want the badger out," she continued. "If you run at the den yelling, he will stay inside forever. But what if you ask your friend Leo to make a little noise first? What if Leo just taps on the wall of the den?" She nudged Leo's teacup. "Leo doesn't have a big stick. He just has a small stone. He plays his little card." Pip's eyes widened. "The grumpy badger will have to peek out to see what the noise is," Pip said, understanding. "Exactly," the Finesser confirmed. "And when he peeks his head out," she slid the sugar bowl forward, "then you can catch him. Don't play your ace first. Lead a small club. Force Leo to play. He probably has no clubs, which means the player with the king must play it. He will be forced to come out of his den before he is ready. And your queen, which looked so small before, will be waiting to win." Pip stared at his cards, a slow smile spreading across his face. "So I don't attack the king. I make his neighbor invite him out to a party he can't refuse." "Precisely," said the Finesser. "You just have to be sitting in the right seat to send the invitation."
After the other students had gone, Pip remained, quietly shuffling his cards. The Finesser was by the window, polishing her silver-tipped cane with a soft cloth until it gleamed. The late afternoon sun slanted through the dusty air of the classroom. "So," Pip said, his voice barely above a whisper, "the secret isn't having the best cards." The Finesser turned, her expression calm and warm. "No," she said, "that is never the secret." "The secret is waiting?" he asked, still unsure. She gave a small, knowing smile. "Not just waiting, Pip," she corrected gently. "It's about understanding the order of things. It's about letting your opponent's strength
become their weakness. Power is often a clumsy, predictable thing. It wants to be first. It wants to be seen. We simply let it go ahead of us and hold the door for it. Pip nodded, finally understanding. He looked at the Queen of Clubs in his hand. It didn't look like a second best card anymore. It looked like a key. Let them lead with their strength, the Finisher murmured, more to herself than to him, as she gazed out the window. We will follow with our cleverness.
You've been listening to a Spark and Anvil chapter, written by the Spark and Anvil writing team for ages 9 to 14. Spark and Anvil is a 501c3 public charity. Apps stay free forever. Curriculum aligned to the Finesser. Released under Creative Commons BY-NC-SA 4.0 for educational reuse. Visit Spark and Anvil for the full transcript.